Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Memchet, and we are holding, of course, in the middle still of the sugya of Hoyel, and the machlokas about where we say Hoyel, and whether Hoyel is in fact the makor of the entire din, which is the famous Eruv that we make, which is called the Eruv Tafshilin, which obviously can only be made if there's a reason why it's mutter midiraisa to make something on Yontif for Shabbos. So we had two basic understandings of that, one according to Rav Chista, one according to Rabbah. According to Rav Chista, it's considered to be the equivalent of Tzorach HaYontif, according to Tosfos, or according to Rashi, it's considered to be an extension of the same concept of the Kedusha of Shvisa, which is Shabbaton or Shabbos. It's all basically the same. And has nothing to do with Hoyel. According to Rabbah, the only reason that it's mutter is because since, as far as the Torah is concerned, we would have been samech on Hoyel, and we would have said, you can go ahead and you can cook something on Yontif, even though it's getting late in the day, you don't need it, because maybe Orchim will come. So we found that that had applications all over the Torah. And then in attacking each other back and forth, Rabbah and Rav Chista, as to whether there really is such a thing as Hoyel, so we got involved in the question of the multiple chiyuvim, because the multiple chiyuvim always included some mention of yontif, and the problem was that the yontif should have actually been mutter because of hayo on some level. And that's where we were up to, where Rabbah was trying to find some other issue rather than a yontif chiyuv. And so he kept finding new things that we could use to substitute for the yontif component. Instead of saying it was the problem was yontif, maybe make him chayev on the gidan hasha because it was the gidan hasha of an avela, and so on and so forth. Anyway, the last thing that Rabbah had tried to say and get away with was that there was an isra muktzah that would have been chayev and malchus and so on. And Abaye really took him to task on that one because he himself had made it very clear that there's no such thing. So anyway, we were up to the last thing that we had learned yesterday was forget about, I think this is where we got up to, was on the third line, which is Afik Havara V'ayel Atzia Sheira, I think. Is that possible? Guys, do you remember where we got up to? I think that's where we got up to. Okay, so this time what we'd like to do is we're trying to find out how can we get an additional malchus in there. So we said what's talking about over there is that you use the wood from an Asherah tree in order to be able to cook. And therefore the Yisr wasn't cooking on Yontev, it was cooking with Atzei Asherah. And why is that a Malkus? Because it says, V'lo yidbak b'yotcha mu'uma min acherim. So that means being nene from an Asherah is dafke mechayev you Malkus. If that's the case, then there should be an additional Malkus, because there's another lav, which is lo tavito eval beitecha, and therefore we have the wrong number of Malkios, because we should have added two Malkios, not one for this one. In fact, the Rambam uses this Gemara as his basis of saying that there are indeed two separate Malkios, one for Lo Tavita Eval Betecha, and one from Lo Yidbak Beyotcha. Okay, says Rabbah, fine. So let's get rid of Avara on Yontif, since Hoyel would have been Materit. And let's throw in the use of Atzei Hegdesh. And what's wrong if we're using Atzei Hegdesh? The Azara is from the fact that it says Vasharihem Sisufum Be'ish Lota Sunken Lashem Elohechem. So the idea over here is that the chiyuv of destruction of any Avodah Zara is bedavka a contrast to the way you have to treat things of Hegdash. This, of course, is the same Isser as the Isser of erasing the Shem Hashem. Everybody knows that that's Asr. This is the basis of that Asr. If that Isser, burning Atzei Hegdash is exactly the same Isser of Lotasun Ken Lashem Elokecha. Omar Rami Barchona. Okay, so now, fine, let's allow Rabbah to get away with that, even though there's a lot of problems with this, as you can immediately see, because the Gemara should have asked, you'd think, what happened to the Isser of Me'ila before we said Me'ila was an additional Malkus, and now we're saying it's not an additional Malkus. How is that? This leads to some very, very fascinating discussions, which are, brilliant, but a little bit technical in nature as to whether the Me'ila comes from the moment of the Havara, which obviously it doesn't. The Me'ila comes only when you're nene, and the Isser of the Hashchosa comes immediately when you burn it. And that's why they're not two Isserim that come at the same time. Okay. But again, this extends like way out of what our topic is. And let's move on, therefore, to see exactly what the Hayel issues are in broader strokes. So the question over here is, what is the relationship of all of this to our Mishnah? And this is actually why it is that we got involved. Remember, in the beginning, we got involved because we learned in our Mishnah that the reason that it would be mutter to keep these things over Yontif would be apparently because since it's Hekdesh, so there's no issur of keeping it. And why would everybody else hold? The first two shittas in the Mishnah hold that it is an issur to keep because it's considered to be something that is hayel, if you would want to, so then you would be able to take off the din of the challah and so on. So we wouldn't say that it's not considered to be yours, right? That's what we said. Now, we're going to see that it, according to Rashi, it turns out that the whole excuse of initially bringing in oil based on that was actually something of a mistake. Rashi even believes that it's a mistake in Girsa. But let's start and take a look now at the Gemara's definitive statement of why it is that this entire sugya of oil really does have to do with the Mishnah. So we had the Machlokas over here about oil. So now Rami Bar Choma suggests, you know what? The machlokas between Rabbah and Rav Chisda apparently is the basis of the machlokas in the Mishnah. Now, we're not talking about, remember that there's two separate issues in the Mishnah. One issue is the question about whether you're going to be over on keeping this thing in your rishos. Okay, so if you're going to tell me, lo zehu, this is not considered to be the chometz Torah was masir, we used one element of hoyo, which Rashi claims is a mistake. But anyway, one element of hoyle was, since you could be shoyle on your nether, so mamela it's considered to be yours. The truth is that is a very problematic hoyle anyway, because to make something yours when it isn't yours in terms of halacha is very, very strange. And it turns out that the Gemara is not even talking about that part of it. The Gemara is talking about the other part of it. And that is, there's a machlokas, remember, between Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yoshua about what it is that you're supposed to do with these challah pieces. So Rebbe Eliezer, who says you're allowed to bake it. So he says you can go ahead and bake it and then be covered the shame afterwards. Okay, so why is he saying that? He's saying that because he holds of hoyel, not the hoyel about you could be shoyel, but the hoyel that says like this, if I bake a particular matzah, or let's consider a big loaf in those days that you would bake, right? So now I have to take off challah. And we're talking over here that this stuff, I'm going to have to be mafrish challah. That's how the whole thing started. Normally, the way I would be mafrish challah is that I would say I would have like a whole bunch of these matzahs, and then I would take off one matzah to be challah on the whole dough, right? And the normal way, of course, is I would take it off of the dough. I wouldn't wait till it's matzah. What he's claiming is that you can bake the entire dough worth of matzah and then take off challah. So now that strikes you as being problematic because one of those matzahs is going to be challah. And that matzah was not allowed to be baked. So, I mean, you know that you're doing something wrong. So how can you get away with baking all of the matzahs when one of them is not allowed to be baked? Ah, so that's what Rami Bar Choma wants to suggest. I think that what is going on over here is that Rebbe Eliezer is saying to himself, look, theoretically, you could take off a little piece of each one of these matzahs, right? And you could say, this is the challah on that matzah. Correct? Okay, so you're saying, okay, but you're not going to do that. You're going to take off a whole matzah. So how did you bake that matzah? Well, but if you wanted to, you could bake every single matzah. And then before you ate that matzah, you break off a piece and take it off as challah. I mean, obviously, you're allowed to bake the matzah that you're going to eat, even though you're going to have to be mafrish challah from it, right? That's the point. Rebbe Eliezer holds, since, theoretically, you could take off from each matzah separately. Okay, so then if that's the case, you're not doing anything wrong in baking every single matzah, basing the baking on hoil. That's the point, whereas Rabbi Yoshua says, no, you don't hold of hoil, and since you don't hold of hoil, you're doing an iser. Because you're, how in the world are you going to do a malacha on yontav? You can't first bake it, because it wasn't baked for achila. And if it's not baked for achila, so then that's the end. You're being over on the malacha. That's what I would suggest. Says Rav Papa, I mean, I don't know whether you have a right to say that the Mechlokas in the Mishnah is hoil. Maybe the point is that Dilma Ad Kan Lo Komer Rabbi Eliezer Hassan, the Amrinan Hoyel. Now, Rashi, either he didn't have the Girsa the Amrinan Hoyel, or he's explaining it in a very, very broad way. But what Rashi understands is that we're not really utilizing the standard Hoyel here. And the reason that Rabbi Eliezer is allowing you to put in each matzah into the oven is because the Be'idna Toka Ayala Tanura Kol Chod V'Chod Chazi Le'Lididei. How do you know it's because of hoil? How do you know it's because if you want to, you would be able to take off a piece of this matzah, and therefore we allow you to bake it? Maybe the point is very simple. You're baking one matzah at a time, right? Okay, you put in this matzah. We say to you, don't do that. You're going to need to take off challah, and therefore you may be making the matzah that is not going to be eaten. Can I eat this matzah if I want to? Yes. How? By taking off another different matzah, right? So every single matzah that I put in, I can say the same thing. So maybe that's what Rebbe Eliezer is being soimich on. Not because you could take off a piece of the matzah, but at the time that you put each one in separately, there's nothing to suggest that this one is a thing that I'm not going to be allowed to put in. I mean, what are you going to say? That when I decide afterwards that matzah number 13 was the one that I decide is going to be challah, so that made it now milam afreya, that made it usher. Why would I say such a thing? So at the time that I'm baking it, it's okay. Maybe that's all he's saying. Masha Inkain, in the case over here, you're going to bake on Yontav, according to Rabbah, and you're going to be allow a guy to be Mechalo Yontav because, the only reason he's going to eat it is because Orchim may show up. I don't know that he would hold a hoel in that case. I mean, currently there's nothing going on that is matir it. Why should I be matir based on the possibility that Orchim will show up? So I don't see that this has anything to do with hoel. And now Rav Shisha Berei Davidi says that it's also, I don't see it in Rabbi Yoshua. Forget about. I understand. Okay, you're right. Rabbi Eliezer may be soimech on something other than hoel to allow you to bake it. And Rabbi Yoshua, who says you cannot bake it, I mean, maybe that's not because he doesn't hold the hoel. It's a completely different thing. Maybe he would hold the hoel the way Rabbah says hoel by Yontem. But Ad Kan Lo Komer Rabbi Yoshua Asab De Lo Amrin and hoel. That's because the ikachod lo chazir lo ledidei velo lo archim. Look, bottom line is, the normal way of taking off challah is to take out one matzah, correct? So what are we fooling ourselves that you could theoretically take off part of each challah? But in essence, there is one challah that's not roy for anybody. It's not roy for you. It's not roy for a kohen. It's not roy for guests. Okay, so therefore you know that that's the reality. In the case of Yonta, where you're baking, where it definitely is, everything is roy. I mean, it's not roy for you because you're not hungry, but it's roy for anybody who would come in. So maybe over there he's made on hayo. He's just saying that in aggregate over here, isn't it true that there's one total volume of one matzah that is not roy? So he's saying, you don't have a right to be makel on that. You can't use a hoel to create a matzah that's roy. There is no one matzah. There's one matzah that's not roy. And that what you're doing is a fiction. Masha Inkain, in the case of Rabbah's hoel, every last bit that you baked on Yontav, there's no fiction. The fact is that if Orchim would come in, then you would be able to justify baking every last thing that you baked on Yontav. Okay, so how can you compare the cases? Over here, you cannot justify baking everything that you bake. There's definitely stuff that you baked over here that was not roy to eat on Yontav. Big difference. Okay, so now came along the Talmidim. They said over Rami Bar Choma's idea that we should make the machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, we should make it dependent on the machlokas of Hoel. Okay, so Rabbi Yirmiya and Rabbi Zera hear this. Rabbi Yirmiya says, excellent, I'm taking Rami Bar Choma's approach. Rabbi Zera says, I don't accept it. Says Rabbi Yirmiyah to Rabbi Zera, for God's sake, why are you so stubborn? You know how many years we've been discussing this Mishnah, and we never had a good pshat in what the machlokas is between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. We never understood it. So we had Milsa de Kashelon v'atya kamashami. Think about how many years we've been thinking about, but my pligi Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. We couldn't figure out what the machlokas was about, right? Because, I don't know, I mean, we started, remember, with the question, maybe they're arguing whether Tovas Hanah is Maman, or Tovas Hanah isn't Maman, and Rabbi Yeshua holds that's all very nice, that would only explain one part. That's why explains why Rabbi Eliezer holds that you got to get rid of it, and Rabbi Yeshua holds that you don't. Okay, but it does not talk about the other question of how you have a right to bake it. We never, ever had an explanation. Comes along, these kids are quoting Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama is a great man. He comes along, he's telling you a good pshat, and now you're so stubborn, I will not accept it. We finally got a pshat that they're arguing in oil. Woo! Thank God. So, Hashtam Ruhamish made the Gavara, but they're saying it over in the name of Rami Bar Chama, and you refuse to accept it. I think it's just pure stubbornness. Or Marley says, Rabbi Zer to Rabbi Yom, but what do you, how am I supposed to accept a crazy pshat like this? It's absolutely wrong. Because, I mean, there's a braita, and if you read the braita, you will soon see that it has nothing to do with oil. Here's the braita. These guys didn't know the braita, apparently. Amar le Rabbi Yeshua. In the braita, Rabbi Yeshua responds to Rabbi Eliezer. And he says to Rabbi Eliezer, according to you, who's saying you should bake it, how do you justify being over on an Isser de Araisa of Lo Taseko Malacha? You're doing Malacha on Yantiv, right? Does that make sense? It's completely usher. Fine. Apparently, this is a mistake. It should say the pasuk kol malacha lo yaseh, which is the yisur malacha on yontiv, lo tasek kol malacha is the yisur malacha on Shabbos. Fine. But basically, how are you allowing him to bake it? And guess what? Rabbi Eliezer didn't respond. Vishasikla, he didn't respond. Now, if what Rami Bar Chama said is right, so then he should have said, well, what do you think, I'm stupid? It's because of the din of oil. I mean, what do you sit there like you don't have what to tell him? Says Rabbi Yirmiyah, what? The fact that it doesn't say in the braisa what it is that he responded to him? I mean, I don't understand what you're thinking. Well, you think Rabbi Eliezer didn't have an answer? I mean, he had some answer. So what's the proof? I mean, if that's right, he says to Rabbi Zera, if that's right, I've got another braisa. It's going to show you how ridiculous that is. It says in the braisa, Amalo Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Eliezer tells Rabbi Yeshua, I don't understand you. Lidvorecha, you say that you leave it to become chometz. Harayu over mishum ba'yirayam ba'yimatzei. Isn't it going to be over on an Isser D'oraisa? And Rabbi Yeshua didn't bother answering him. We know that Rabbi Yeshua answered him because in the Mishnah he answers him. He says, "Beferish lo zeu chametz muzar lo mishum ba'yira ba'yimatzei." Since this is not going to be your personal chametz, and it is essentially challah that has not yet been given to a particular kohen, so it's your business. So put it in a closet. Who cares if it's chametz, right? So he answered him in the Mishnah, and in the Braita, it doesn't say that he answered him. So you see that sometimes we quote partial arguments. We don't give the answer to the argument, right? We just tell you half of the argument. So that's what we did over here. Here we had part of it in the Mishnah, in the Braisa, and the answer was in the Mishnah. So maybe over here it's the same thing. Rabbi Eliezer didn't answer him here. So Shasik Leber Braisa. Over here, Rabbi Yeshua didn't answer him in the Braisa, but did answer him in the Mishnah. So over here also, so the same thing is true over here. Rabbi Yeshua asked Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer doesn't answer him in the Braisa, but maybe he answers him in some other Mechilta. So the Mechilta is a kli, right? Mechilta is like a big cup, meaning a whole set of brises. So maybe he answered him in a different set of brises that was prejudiced towards listening to the svaras of Rebbe Eliezer, and this one was not. So it's a difference. That's no reason not to accept it. Tanya, Rebbe Amar Lachak Rebbe Eliezer, so Rebbe Paskins, we should be able to do, we should bake the tamei dough and then take off challah. And Rabbi Yitzchak says, no, the halacha is like Ben Viseira. What you should do is put it in the freezer. And that way, if you put it in the freezer, it's not going to become chimutz. Okay, fine. Now, Kama Shior Isa. Now we got another, once we're bringing up this braita, huh? What's the maximum volume of dough that you're allowed to make a one-time on Pesach? Well, I mean, let's consider the practicalities of the situation. We started off yesterday with determining that dough that is left unworked for 18 minutes, you're going to have to worry, if you don't have a reference dough to see whether it turned into chametz, you're going to have to worry that maybe it's chametz, right? Okay, I mean, what people do today is absolutely disastrous, because what you see in most matzah factories is that when people do the lisha and there's a backup, so what do they do if there's a backup? So they don't want to mess up the dough to start working it again. So they figure they'll tap on the dough and treat it like a bongo, you know. And if they tap it, it's not going to become chametz. And that's ridiculous. It will become chametz. So you know, what you need to do under those circumstances, you take that whole beautiful dough that was all ready for the hole-making machine, and you squish it up and you start over again and put it at the beginning of the pile. So there is no way to stop it from chametz like that, right? So if that's the case, I mean, if you've got a very large dough, you're working on this dough. I mean, who are you fooling to think that you're going to be able to work on this whole dough at one time to prevent it from chametz? So we should say that it's okay because it's being worked. I mean, what are you saying? A 5 meter long dough, if you're working on one end, you can work on the other end? That's absurd. So, I mean, there's got to be some shear. So what would you say the maximal shear would be that you can rely that that is considered to be one dough upon which I'm working, and I don't have to be chashish for the chametz as long as I'm working on it? So kama shear isa. It depends what type of grain you're talking about, okay? If you're talking about chitim, so that's wheat flour, a high-quality flour, over there you've got the shear of 2 kabim. The 2 kabim is basically 48 beitzim. But if you've got low-quality flour, like saorim, that's barley, that takes longer. And therefore, you got a little bit more time over there, and it doesn't machmitz as quickly. Over there, you can use even 3 kabim. Rabbi Natan Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. No, it's just the opposite. In the case of chitim, it's actually chitim is more slow to be machmitz than saorim. It's just that you think saorim is slow because you don't see the impact in the low-quality dough as quickly as you do in chitim, but the reality is just the difference is the opposite, that the saorim is machmitz more quickly and it should be 2 kabim. Okay, wait a minute. I mean, none of this makes any sense. Well, Tanya, I mean, everybody's sitting here. We have Rabbi Yishmael ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko saying the halacha about chitim and saorim. There's another brayta that says Rabbi Yishmael ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko omer, that bechitim shalosha kabim b'besorin arba kabim. And that certainly is a contradiction to what he said before, that it was 2 in chitim and 3 in sorim, and now it's 3 and 4. How do you explain that? No, that doesn't bother me. Because remember, there's 2 issues to take into consideration. There's what the grain is, and then there is how well refined the grain is. And that's going to make a big difference. It's going to make a big difference for your diets also, if you're trying to make sure that you eat the right kind of bread, right? So it's all very nice to say it's made out of wheat or it's made out of barley. But you also have to know, is it made out of whole wheat? Is it made out of whole barley? How are you going to compare the differences in the refinement? So that's true over here also. So there's a different issue. Ha b'chasichata, the brisa over here that ups it to 3 and 4 is talking about poor quality processing, and habamaliyata, and the other one is dealing with a better quality process, so that it depends, really, if it's poor quality, so then it's going to have a longer time for it to become chimitz, because it's filled with all kinds of other things, and it's not, the grain isn't so good. Rav Papa, that's interesting, because note, says Rav Papa, it's an interesting thing that has to do with business transactions. And remember that we can always apply the reality of the issues in the Gemara, which is that you see from here that there is a relationship of 2 to 3 in the difference between quality of wheat, whereas in quality of barley, the relationship is 3 to 4, which is very interesting, because what that means is that you've got low-quality wheat relative to high-quality wheat is actually a bigger difference than low-quality barley is relative to good-quality barley. Because when it comes to the wheat, the difference between them is 2 to 3, which is 1/3. When it comes to the barley, the difference between them is 3 to 4, which is a difference only of 1/4. Amar Rav, Kaba Malugna, Lepischa, one kav from the town of Malugna. And that's why everybody drinks Malaga wine, just to remember that, you know, in the States. So one kav of, no, I'm just kidding, one kav of Malugna, that's barley wine anyway. And that's the din of how much you're allowed to make on Pesach at a time. The same thing is true of Challah, and that's the same shear.
What?
That's absolutely ridiculous. It says Beferish, but it's not. Chameshes Ravoyim Kemach Ve'ot Chayavim B'Challah. That's what, that's actually, I should say, Itmar Rav. This is completely against the famous, I mean, this is, this whole idea, it's a Mishnah, it's not, is completely connected, Rav, that he's saying a kav is enough. And over here it says you have to have 1 1/4 kav. No, Rav is saying, obviously, that a kava melugnai is the shear of 1 1/4 kav. That's all. Okay. So comes Rav Yosef and says, look, I could tell you, the women in my family are very makbid, and they don't bake a lot of dough at a time, not Pesach. They make just a little kapiza at a time for Pesach. So that's 3/4 of a kav. That way nobody's going to come like their chimut. So Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef, what, you call that a chumrah? That's not a chumrah. That's a kula. Because my dietary for chumrah, it's a chumrah dasi de kulahu. You're going to end up being very maker. Why? Because in baking such a small amount of dough, you're not chayev to take off challah. So then you're going to be mafkia the chayev of challah. Because you're only if it's 1 1/4 kav that you're baking at a time, you chayev to take off challah. That's not a right way to do it. Amarlei, Rabbi Yosef said to him, of course we take off challah. The only thing is, we take off challah only after we're mitzaref a lot of the different small matzahs in one basket to make it all one chiyuv. Then we've got tons of matzah to be able to take off challah, which of course is what we do nowadays. And we're avdan k'Rabbi Eliezer. Ditznan Rabbi Eliezer omer, harodeh v'notein l'sal, hasal mitzarfam l'challah. If you take off your matzahs, your pitos, rodeh of course is pitos, not matzahs, I mean, take it off the side of the tanur, you put it into a basket, and then that basket makes them all one dough ex post facto to be mechayev them in challah. By the way, this is a very fascinating issue because it has a very interesting modern problem associated with it. And that is that oftentimes a woman will bake a smaller amount for challah. I mean, Shabbos challahs, I mean, the chiyuv of challah. It's very confusing that we use challah for that way. So she'll bake her bread, let's say, right? And she didn't have enough to take off challah, d'oraisa. Okay, so she was machmer and she took off challah without a bracha from a smaller amount, puts it in the freezer. Okay. Then she bakes the next day more. Same thing happens. She puts it in the freezer, but she doesn't realize that at one point, the freezer is being mitzaref the chalas, which are now chayev and chala d'oraisa, which she never took off. Which means that now she would have to take off chala again, this time with a bracha, right? So this kind of situation appears to be very tangential over here in the Gemara, really has very fascinating applications. So, I mean, what people are semech on in this case is the fact that they're usually wrapped separately, put them in a plastic bag and so on, and that makes them separate salim, and therefore the big kli, which is the freezer, won't be mitzaref them. But, I mean, you could see, again, the issue of kula da asili de chumra. It could be applicable even bizman hazeh. Okay, so anyway, so that's what we do. And when we do that, we got no problem, because then we take off challah, and there's no kula, everything is done the best possible way. Small amount of dough in order to avoid chimutz, tzir of tzal in order to be able to take off the challah d'oraisa. V'yomer v'yuda amar Shmuel, we paskin that way, that the tzal is mitzaref, and that's great. Amar leiso, Abaye says, wait a second over here, you are misquoting. This thing that you say, that Rabbi Eliezer says, that you can be mitzaref with the sal? Didn't Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say about that, that Loshono Ela Kikarocho Bava Shanoshchot Zomizo, Avakakin Lo. You can't combine things that never bite each other. You know, in Bava, people are always arguing. You put a couple of matzahs into the same sal, and that's like Hagrid's Book of Monsters. I mean, my God, they keep biting each other, right? So there, I can't get nothing. Law just sits there like a stone. I give up. I just give up. Okay, so no shot obviously means that the dough catches one on the other, and then when you pull them apart, you pull off a little part from the other ones, right? So that's the only way that he's saying that it's going to be mitzvah. If you can't take completely separate loaves, throw them into a sal, and expect them to be connected, says Rav Yosef, I'm sorry, but I disagree. Itmar Alam, Rabbi Chanina said beferish that afilu ka'achin, that we paskin even your long French loaf and so on. It's not true. Rabbi Eliezer holds that even totally separate pieces are mitzuraf in a sal. And that's how we do it. And therefore, we do it l'chumran both directions. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah, suppose you've got a tablet. You have a board, right? It doesn't have a levazvaz. Doesn't have any rim around it. These are words that we use very often in Masechet Kelim. So, in la levazvazin. So what would be the din? If you put the matzahs on a board that doesn't have an edge, is just being on the same surface, is he saying that that's mitzarif them, or does it need to be a basket that's got like a side? Toch kli b'inan, is it the inside of a kli that is mitzarif and that does not appear here without a levazvaz? O dilma avir kli b'inan, or it just needs to be in the airspace of a kli, which it is. Take. That's a question. Tanya Rebbe Eliezer, Omer in a Braita, it says that the sal is mitztarif, and Rebbe Yoshua says the tanur itself, if they're all baked together in one tanur, you don't need afterwards to combine them. So in other words, either the tanur is mitzarfan, or if you bake them separately, yes, you could still be mitzarif them in a basket, but you don't always need the basket if you put them in the tanur at the same time. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Kikarot shel Bavel shel Noshchot Zomizo Mitztarfot. Those in the tanur where they get connected to each other, you pull them apart, that's a problem because in Bavel they used to make the type of matzahs that we make that are round and big. And therefore, if you put a few of them into the tanur, they very often will touch each other. It's a big problem on Pesach. And that's why we do them one by one in our little small tanurim. Obviously, in the big professional tanurim, the tanur is as big as a room. But that's because if there are no shchot zomizo, only in that case, in Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, is it considered to be a tziruf. And now we're up to Sir Richard, who will give us some guidance about how to bake matzahs in a practical way, since Richie personally takes the responsibility for the Lisha every year, and you got all these other people that are doing other things, and you're trying to make a rapid and efficient, because every minute is costing you money, so you're trying to make as efficient a possible line in which this is going on in a chain. And that's what the Mishnah is going to talk to us about, how we can do that efficiently without getting into problems of maybe waiting too long and it becoming chometz.
Alibi that Shana bearing, what do you call it?
Yeah.
All the other
yeah. Who knows what's ever going to be?
The best.
Yeah. Okay, Sir Richard. Great. So Rabbi Gamliel, he says, look, you don't have to be so machmer on this. You could actually have three richies. Just think about that. You could have three richies side by side. Every one of them is doing lisha, which means that because you got a small oven, like richie number one will be finished. Richie number two is still going to be busy. And then Richie number three might be working on this for hours. I mean, by the time they finish the whole, it doesn't matter, says Rav Gamliel, because look, even if you've only got a small tanur and you've got to be ofot betanur achad zo achar zo, as long as people are constantly working on it, you know, you don't have to worry about it. Okay, they'll get tired, they'll leave it. But, I mean, it's not going to become chometz that quickly. So we can be maker. The chachomim say, no, come on. I mean, that's too much of a kula. What you can do is you can get an assembly line. But then the assembly line has to be very carefully controlled time-wise, right? Because you need to do it in the correct order. So you have Richie number one. He starts now the Lisha, and then when he finishes the Lisha, he then passes it on to the assembly line where they start now spreading it out. I forgot how do you say aricha in English, where you, they roll the dough and they make it into the right shape is the meaning of the aricha. Of course, in those days, it was the same person that did all of the jobs, so it's not quite an assembly line, but the idea is the same. So what you do is you can have three people that are being osik in the butzik all at one time, but they can't all start at the same time. So in other words, number one starts, completes the lisha, and now starts going on into the rolling. Then number two starts the lisha. Then number one finishes the rolling and goes into the baking. So then number two starts the rolling, and number three then starts the lisha. And then when number one finishes the baking, then number one goes back to the lisha as the previous number three is finishing up hers, and and we continue on in this way to have constant work. So that's how it goes. So one of them does the lisha. One of them is doing the aricha, which includes the rolling and the making it into the right shape. One of them is doing the baking. Rabbi Akiva says, I find this entire discussion to be a bit ludicrous. I mean, we are talking about so many variables that to give these kind of rules is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you know, how lazy are these women? How active is this Richie? How hot is this oven? How good is the fuel? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you don't take any of the issues into consideration. And you're giving me some weird way of doing things which might work under some circumstances, not work under other circumstances. You can't make up a rule like that. I mean, lo kol hanashim, lo kol ha'itzim, lo kol ha'tanurim, shavin. Use your brains. Ze haklal. Look, there's one rule you've got to remember. Do the best you can. But keep careful watch on the Isa. And tafach til tosh betzone. The moment that you see any signs of this swelling, which is going to turn into that pale coloration, immediately get it cooled down. That's what you've got to do. Cool your hands and start working it again with cold hands, because otherwise it's going to turn into chometz momentarily. And as the Mishnah Berurah points out, this is a real halacha that everybody ignores. Everybody's looking at their watches. How come nobody's looking at the dough? If the dough starts to swell, you must take action immediately. It is not just a function of the time. And that's because in working the dough warms up. And as it warms, it becomes more likely to become chometz, even in less than 18 minutes. And therefore, the way the Rush puts it, that once you've worked that dough, if you leave it even just for a moment, I mean, okay, what does he mean by just by a moment? But it's very, very machmir that it's going to be mischametz immediately, which is why we're so makbid, that once it's started and you've worked on it, we don't allow it to sit even for a second. And we don't say, well, you know, you got 18 minutes, and even if you're going to be mitzarev to shehiyais, like we said, it's such a big chumrah. But with the Rush, it's not a big chumrah at all. So, Tana Rabbana, what this means is, look, let's just spell it out to you, okay? Lasha, when number one is doing her lisha, okay, she finishes it, she moves on to rolling. Now, when she moves on to rolling, woman number two takes the lisha stand instead of her, okay? And then when that woman, number one, has finished rolling. She moves on to start baking. Then woman two moves on to rolling. And then number three moves on to the stand where you do the kneading. And this keeps on going. Once the first woman finishes afia, then she goes back to take stand number one to do the lisha. And then number two moves on to do now the afia. And number three is now doing the rolling. And this just keeps on going. V'chos rot chalila. This is like a little dance, as Rashi puts it. The word chalila means machol. It comes from the word for a dance. So when this is done right, it's like a dance, and it's beautiful to watch. And then everything, when it starts to click, everybody's happy. Then it's clicking properly. When it's not clicking, everybody's unhappy. So the real way to know if something is chametz or not is look at the faces of the people working. If they're miserable, throw it out. Okay. Rabbi Akiva Omer. So, all right, wait, sorry. Chosman shows code bebatzeik in a bali dechimut. The point being that as long as you're working on the dough, it's not going to become chometz. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, look, I mean, in lokal anashim and lokal tanurim and lokal itzim, and in the Braita, this was like spoken out. Omer Rabbi Akiva. I went to Rabbi Gamliel and I said to him, listen, Rabbi. I mean, Yalamdenu Rabbeinu, I mean, when you're giving over these halachas, what are we talking about? Are we talking about Nashim's Rizot, that they've got a lot of energy and they're working hard? Are we talking about, I don't want to say lazy, but maybe they're not exactly Rizot, you know? Are we talking about dry wood? Are we talking about damp wood that's not going to burn so well? Are we talking about the kind of oven that is well insulated, so it's a Tanur Cham? Are we talking about a Tanur Tzonin? I mean, like, what kind of shear is this? Marley, Rabbi Gamliel says, listen, in the end, of course, ein lecha ela masha shanu chachamim. We can give general guidelines, but the overall halacha is, if you're running into trouble, and it looks like you're getting a dough that is about to swell, and you can see that. So then, when I say about to swell, I mean about to swell to the extent that it's going to be hirsifu ponav. So then, zeh aklal. Tafach, it starts swelling till tosh betzonein. Get that cold water over your hands and over the dough as you spread it over the dough to cool it, and then start working it again. Now we're up to Sir Richard overtime, and you know that these people that work with doughs, their overtime payments are very, very high. So we should take up a collection today for some talisker post Pesach, of course. Go ahead, Sir Richard.
First of all, I got to say that I hope there's a fourth woman somewhere in the mix that's cleaning the kelim between all of these things. I mean, because
oh, what a mess! And so now that we've been talking about if the dough swells, it's time to talk about the different shiurim of swelling. Because remember, we started off our whole discussion with the chometz nuksha problem when we were trying to bring a raya from Rabbi Meir about si'ur. Remember what si'ur is. No connection to se'or. So si'ur is chometz in the process of becoming chometz. And it starts to swell. We had the machlokas, which was this Mishnah, which we spoke about earlier, between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, about at what point the chametz is considered to be fully chametz, and at what point it's considered to be a midway chametz, which remember is called chametz nukshe, that is not really very good to eat. People don't eat it. It's not nifsa from achilas kelev, but it is nukshe from the beginning. And we had a pasuk, possibly, maybe deraisa, maybe it was only drabon, it depends whether we viewed the whole thing as being an asmachta, that the chometz nuksha, you would be osur to eat, but you would not be chayav koris on it. So if it's, we're talking about the siur over here, there's a stage at which you're osur, and there's a stage in which it comes to the point where it's actually chometz gomer. So here's where we begin, and it's an extremely confusing Mishnah, because the Mishnah is attempting to pack in the different shitas of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in a way that interrelates with each other and therefore leaves us a bit confused. So si'ur has to be burned, which appears to say that it's osur b'hana'a, and ha'ochlo patur. But if you ate it, you would not be chayev. You wouldn't be chayev anything. You wouldn't be chayev kores. You wouldn't be chayev makas. If, however, it is siduk, siduk means it's got all of these cracks that go all the way through it, and that is definitely chametz. If you eat that, you would actually be chayev kores. So it goes all the way from a stage in which there's no chiyev, even of malchus, to one in which there's a chiyev, even of kores, and therefore an isra, which is b'chayev a korba. A zeu siur. Now, how do we define siur? Well, if it has these cracks in it, kikarnei chagavim, and that would mean that they're like thin cracks that are like the antennae of grasshoppers, and they don't go all through into each other. There are just cracks on the surface. And what is called siduk, obviously beyond kardei chagavim, where over there you're telling me that you're chayev kores. There we're talking about they have these deep interacting cracks that have covered the entire surface, and they mix one with the other. So they are nitarvu astakim sebezeh. This is Rabbi Yehuda Shita. So what does this mean? It means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it is just swollen, even if it's swollen, as we're about to talk about and we've spoken about earlier, it's swollen to the point where it's ichsifu panav. Remember, the shir of ichsifu panav is like a person whose hair is standing on edge because he's very frightened, so he's turned pale. The dough can turn pale. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if it turns pale, it's not considered yet to be siur. If it gets kikarne chagavim, it is considered to be siur, which is osur to eat, but not a chiev. If it turns into deep siduk, then it's actual chametz gomer. So says Rabbi Yehuda. The chachomim omrim, and it's going to turn out that these chachomim, of course, Rabbi Meir. Either way, if there's any kind of cracking, even like karnei chagavim, that's chametz gomer. And if you eat that, you will be chayev kores. The siur that is considered to be osur, that you're not chayev for, that is the earlier stage that Rabbi didn't even mention. And that is kol sheichsifu panav ki adam sha'amdu sa'arotav. So a person whose hair is on end because he's seeing something terrifying, so if the dough turns pale like that, so then you would be chayev. As according to Rabbi Yehuda, that is perfectly kosher matzah, and therefore it's even mutar b'hanan. Now, we saw earlier that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that at least min rabbanan, we asered eating it because of the shita of Rabbi Meir. Now, the Braita gets us very confused by saying the following. What is considered to be siur? Kosher yichsifu panav ki adam shamdu sa'arotav. What is considered to be siduk? That's karnei chagavim. But that, of course, is the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Now, that turns things upside down in the Mishnah, because here we have the Chachamim being Rabbi Yehuda. And in the Mishnah, we have the Chachamim here represented as Rabbi Meir. So the Chachamim omrim, no, siur is kikarnei chagavim, which is Rabbi Yehuda Shita. And siduk is only once you have these deep cracks that have now broken into one another, so that the entire dough is furrowed deeply. And either way, if you eat either one, now this makes no sense, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, this is simply not true. If we moved on to Rabbi Yehuda, then this statement is absolutely wrong. So apparently, we've gone back to Rabbi Meir, which is what the Gemara is about to point out. Didn't you say in the Mishnah that siur yisaref ha'ochlo patur divi Rabbi Yehuda? And over here, you're representing Rabbi Yehuda as saying that you're chayev kores even on karnei chagavim. Huh? No. The last piece in this braita is going back to tell me Rabbi Meir. Ema, l'Rabbi Meir, zevezeh ha'ochlo bekaret. This is not a reference to Rabbi Yehuda. Says Rava, what exactly would be the logic of Rabbi Meir? I mean, if in reality we note that there are three stages, ichsifu panav, karnei chagavim, and this din of calling something completely cracked, which is called siduk. So then, if there are three stages, where does he get the idea that you're chayev before you complete the process? Because the final stage is the end of the process. So it doesn't really make sense for a marriage just arbitrarily to suggest that, okay, let's just take the middle of the process, and at that point it's considered to be chometz gomer. Where would he come up with that? So my time at a Rebbe Meir, I'll tell you, it's because he says there is a surface way of looking at things and a deep way of looking at things. So you can't judge the dough by its cover. That is a superficial, surface-only analysis. In reality, if the ongoing fermentation in the inside of the dough has already reached the surface and turned the surface into karnei chagovim, then you can be sure that beneath the surface there is an awful lot more fermentation going on that has not yet come to the surface, and you cannot judge the dough just by looking at the surface. Therefore, for sure, once it's hit karnei chagovim on the surface, you have to assume that inside you've got a fully chimutzed dough, and you would be chayv kores for eating it. Okay, Rabotai, again, a daf introducing many brand new ideas and very many practical ideas that have important implications for how it is that we go about baking our matzahs today. So let us hope that we get together to actually put these into effect, as Sir Richard has pointed out, and it shouldn't just be a neshama parim svateinu.